Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, coming to you from on location at Manitoba Ag Days in Brandon. It's a buzz of activity again this year as the show kicks off the start of Manitoba's agricultural season. We've pulled together some of the most important information for you here on the podcast. We'll touch base with Farm Credit Canada Chief Agriculture Economist Craig Klemmer about what to expect in 2020. Manitoba Cooperator reporter Alexis Stockford will tell us what Manitoba Premier Brian Pallister had to say about the carbon tax and grain drying. The Western producer's Robert Arneson will fill us in on one farmer's take on how to make the most of data on the farm. And our own podcast producer and Glacier Farm Media Tech reporter Spencer Myers will join us on this side of the microphone to tell us about what caught his attention at the show. But up now is Alexis Stockford's first report about the looming challenge of clubroot. She caught up with Justine Cornelson and Jan Orchard of the Canola Council of Canada, and this is what she found out.
So I guess the main question that I have is, when you talk about clubroot in Manitoba, are we taking it seriously enough? Is the average producer taking it seriously enough, do you think?
You know what, in the last few years, the traction has definitely gained. I'm going to grower meetings, people will at least ask about it or are familiar with it. Some still turn the blind eye, but I think it's definitely gaining traction. The province has been very proactive. They're out there trying to help producers, monitoring it, surveying for it. So I think we're moving in the right direction, but it's going to take probably a few more fields before people really start to consider doing
it's
something.
It's like not exercising and eating healthy till the doctor tells you to do it. And I find with clubroot, people don't really address it until they have the problem.
Yeah.
And I think people in Manitoba, through education, are now realizing that this is a proactive approach and they have to not wait until they get clubroot before they deal with it. They have to start dealing with it now. And like I said in the presentation, that opportunity is still here. And Southern Alberta too, and most of Saskatchewan, but certainly in Manitoba, the opportunity to proactively get ahead of this disease is there for sure.
Because I remember like Cattle Lab a couple of years ago, and you came out and you're like, here's some samples, who wants to get closer? And everyone, you might as well have been like the black plague,
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of interested, you know, in terms of how much does that actually translate to, have they changed anything when they went back to their farms that day type deal. So when you're looking at the shotgun approach that you guys are advocating, I guess, what are some of the weak points in that shotgun approach right now in terms of what guys are doing right now?
Well, a lot of the practices just don't happen, right? Like growing clubroot resistant varieties, you look at the number of acres in Manitoba that are actually growing clubroot resistant, it's very low. I wish I could remember the number, but it's a very small percentage. We do see that number start to creep up, but we're talking very few acres that are growing a resistant variety. When we get into the northern half of the province, right, we're growing on a tight rotation. So there's things like that, where there's areas within the province that don't grow canola, you know, it's 1 in 6 years or something like that. So there's, I guess, different weak spots for different production areas and I guess different farming opportunities and options too, where we do see those differences.
Probably the weak spots are the hardest to do things. So sanitation of equipment is not easy and fun. Not growing canola for several years is not easy and not fun. So those ones are not being followed as quickly and adopted as quickly as, say, weed control, because everyone's doing that anyway. It's pretty easy, and it's like everyone knows the value of weed control, you know. So it's hard to put a value on each one of the management recipe ingredients, but certainly growing resistant variety and rotate and crop rotation would be the top two, undoubtedly. And growing a resistant variety should be really quite easy, in my opinion. Maybe there's not enough seed to go around quite yet, but certainly there will be in the near future. And I think crop rotation needs to be adhered to close second there for sure.
So when we talk about transitioning from that 2-year to a 3-year rotation, and like you said, it's not easy. It's a hard sell, right?
Yeah.
So I guess what's the starting point that you would say for guys? What kind of advice do you have to kind of convince them that this can be done?
I think it's a good time to talk to your neighbors and find out what they can grow and start to go to seminars on alternate crops to see what your options are. And I think start to grow small areas of new crop that you're not familiar with to make sure you don't put all your eggs in one basket or something. Start getting familiar with growing crops that you think are going to be successful in your area, rather than waiting till you're forced to do it, right? This is what you kind of don't want to be backed into a corner where now you have no choice but to do that. So I know the guys in Alberta, like I said, it's a slow process. They thought it was going to be nice and easy to all of a sudden, say, put peas in their rotation, but it's not. We had a lot of failures with people that tried to grow too much of a crop that they don't really know how to grow, right? So, I mean, it sounds easy. You put a seed in the ground and you pull out the combine at the end of the year, but it's just not that simple, right? So I think farmers need to talk to their neighbors and their friends and people to understand the tricks behind some of the other crops too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Dan really covered that. Like, yeah, it's something that, at least Manitoba, we've been open about. It's not a regulated pest, which is something I forgot to mention now that I think about it. So we've been able to talk openly about it a little more. People aren't, I guess, afraid to admit that they have clubroot, right? There's no potential cropping restrictions that will be enforced on them. So I think we've done a really good job that way. And if we continue talking about it more and more, I think that education piece is going to spread and people are going to start looking at some options. And that's not only for clubroot, that's for all crops and disease aspects, and it's a way to manage things.
And you basically said that this is not an if you get it, this is a when you get it.
I think so, you know, and even some of the researchers kind of suggest that there's like a thin layer of clubroot right across the prairies. I don't know that that's for sure the case, because we get a lot of negative soil samples, so you think they would all be positive, but certainly that's one mindset, is that there's just a thin layer across the prairies and it's blowing everywhere, so unless you do other management steps, you're going to find it and you're going to end up with the problem.
My understanding from the presentations that, like, what we first thought management was going to look like, and in terms of how arduous it was, in terms of like sanitation, and in terms of all these things, and maybe that was a real turnoff for guys being like, who has time for that? I don't have time for that. And maybe it's not as arduous.
I think you're right.
As you.
Like Alberta,
I think sanitation was like top of the
yeah,
list. Like, which, on a disease management, it makes sense, but it's just not practical.
It wasn't practical.
It's not practical for people.
And we've often said in the past that growers will read through a management strategy till they get to something that they can't really do, then they'll throw that article or extension material away. And unfortunately, sanitation was first on the list, so they threw that away before reading any further. Now we've dropped that down on our list a little way, so they'll read some of the other management strategies before throwing it away or whatever they do, you know. So, and I think we've understood too that sanitation doesn't mean a toothbrush and you're under scrubbing and spraying and bleaching. We're just talking about removing large lumps of soil, right? And if someone's coming to your farm from Alberta, you may want them to bleach and sanitize, right? That's a different story. But when you're going from field to field on your own farm, I think you assess your own risk and decide your own level of sanitation you're going to do, which might just include a rubber mallet knocking off large lumps of soil, right? In Alberta, if we move a really small amount of soil, it's heavily contaminated, so it will cause a problem. In Manitoba, with soils much lower infested, you'd have to move a lot of soil here compared to Alberta to start a new problem. So a little bit of cleaning goes a long way still in Manitoba.
Are there any other aspects that of clubroot management that you think there's a real misunderstanding in terms of guys are thinking this is way more arduous than it has to be?
I guess
I'd say the patch probably.
Yeah, you know, the patch management I think is something people just think is going to be way, way too hard. And really part of patch management would just include reducing tillage in that patch or not putting canola in that patch for a few years. It doesn't necessarily mean you've got to put a fence around it and, you know, put signs up or anything. I think we misunderstand the value of putting a grass crop or something in that infected region. it keeps the soil from blowing away, it keeps the soil from eroding, it lets everyone know, including the hired man, that there's that you shouldn't be working through this land and tilling up this land. In Alberta, we have quite aggressive tillage in that clubroot region, and whether it's that's why we have clubroot, or you know, or I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg there, but we have a lot of tillage in that clubroot region, and it just spreads like, honest to God, like nobody would ever believe that it would spread. Like from fence post to fence post in some fields that have aggressive tillage, where every inch of that field has clubroot. And then the guys who have true zero tillage, they'll have patches that slowly kind of morph into larger areas, but it's in, I think, in the off years of canola that we don't think about clubroot. You're growing peas and you're growing barley and growing wheat, you don't think about clubroot, but it's still going to get moved around by your seeding equipment, by your tillage equipment and all that kind of stuff too. So that's maybe something that's overlooked a little bit too, particularly in areas with aggressive tillage.
That was the Manitoba Cooperators' Alexis Stockford speaking to Justine Cornelson and Dan Orchard of the Canola Council of Canada about clubroot and how farmers can stay on top of this challenge. You're listening to Between the Rows on location at Manitoba Ag Days, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. A bit later, we'll talk to FCC's Craig Klemmer about economic conditions, and Glacier Farm Media technology writer Spencer Myers will stop by to tell us about a presentation he made here at the show. We'll also hear from Alexis Stockford again about Manitoba Premier Brian Pallister's take on the carbon tax and grain drying. But up first is the Western producer's Robert Arneson. Robert spoke to Saskatchewan farmer and Ag Days presenter Christiane Hibert about what data can do on the farm.
So I'm here at Ag Days in Brandon with Christiane Hibert of Hibert Grain Ventures. And one of your topics this morning was about financial management and using data in sort of a strategic, thoughtful way. And one of the key points you're trying to make to the audience was the importance of using financial statements as a good piece of data or information to make management decisions. Can you just explain the point you were trying to make this morning?
Yeah, so I think it's down the line of everyone's hooked on this big data or all the trinkets that can go on our combines or air seeders to be the data points when, you know, we've been filing tax returns for 100 years, which gives us good financial data, or at least a base, and it's free. We don't have to spend any money on it. We already do it. And there's a whole bunch of nuggets in there to help you run your operation. So once you get your financial data organized, especially if you're doing statements, items such as working cap and working capital percentage and debt service are every bit as important to your operation, maybe even more, than knowing your yield per acre, your fuel usage, or every other little nugget that we can get from the new data. So I think sometimes you just need to focus on small steps on the financial side that are free to start your process down the journey of where am I going to go in data in the next 10 years.
So just for an example, you mentioned during your presentation the importance of working capital percentage of your expenses in the next year. Can you explain a little bit more why that's an important piece of financial data?
Yeah, so to calculate working capital as percentage of next year expenses kind of lets you know, how much leeway you have if this year goes bad. So if your working capital starts decreasing, you know, you're going to have to go look for more financing. You're going to have to find ways to cut costs, etc. Versus if your working capital is a high percentage of next year's expenses, you have a big cushion. You're probably ready for expansions. You know, succession plans are going to be easier because there's more cash flow. There's so many things that can be discussed around working cap. And then the other side of it is just, one, the stress factor of not knowing it, but two, if your working capital is at a bad state, so let's call it, you know, 35% or less of next year's expenses, the sooner you can know that, the better you could plan.
So what is a good number that farmers should sort of target or shoot for?
I mean, 75% is a great number, 50% is okay. If it's 100% or more, I actually think it creates a bit of laziness because you've got a whole year's expenses in your checking account, which doesn't necessarily equate, you know, to being aggressive and looking for new things. So in that, I'd call it that 50 to 80 range it's a pretty good spot to be.
So again, just to repeat, the point you're trying to make is this is a good starting point to use data that farmers are probably already familiar with to make some decisions using that information.
Exactly. I think we think data is pretty daunting when in fact some of these little things aren't daunting. And the big thing, as you said, is I think data is useless unless you can make a decision from it. And this financial stuff, you can make decisions, and it can highly change how you operate your farm. And it's right there.
That was the Western Producers' Robert Arneson speaking to Saskatchewan farmer Christian Hibert about how technology can change the bottom line. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, recording on location at Manitoba Ag Days in Brandon. A little later, I'll speak to Farm Credit Canada Chief Agriculture Economist Craig Klemmer, and technology writer Spencer Myers will join us to talk about his presentation and what's caught his eye at the show. But up now is once again the Manitoba Cooperator's Alexis Stockford, who's been covering the back-and-forth discussion of carbon taxes and grain drying. Alexis, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Gord. Great to be here.
So Manitoba Premier Brian Pallister kicked off this discussion, and what did he have to say?
So just for a little bit of background first, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone who's been paying at all attention in the prairies that the carbon tax in Manitoba has been a bit of a saga. And, you know, in 2017, the government said, okay, here's our plan, and we're going to have this $25 per ton flat rate, which kind of conflicted with what the federal government wanted to do, which was, you know, gradually ramping up a carbon tax until it's $50 a ton by 2022. And so there was that conflict, and Ottawa basically said, no, we're not going to let you do this. And, you know, in 2018, the Pallister government rolled back and said, no, we're not going to do a carbon tax. In 2019, they are taking the federal government to court. So, like, this has been this big, long saga. And basically what he said was that he had a conversation with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and that he is basically asking the government to look at some of the principal tenets of that original plan, including a flat rate. Although it is worth noting that he hasn't necessarily said what that flat rate is going to be.
And I heard that grain drying was part of this conversation today.
I mean, yeah, for sure. You know, that's something that Keystone Agricultural Producers in the province have brought up, as well as a lot of other, like the other provinces have brought up, just the cost that the carbon tax has really levied against producers this year, particularly in light of what has been termed the harvest from hell. The Brian Pallister had some things to say. He basically committed that his plan would exempt grain dryers from that carbon tax.
It was in our original plan that was rejected by Ottawa, but it's the kind of thing that matters to producers. And clearly, you don't dry grain for fun. You do it because you want to get the quality up, and you want to maintain the value for your farm. So it's an investment that has to be made by ag producers, and in particular with the fall we had across the province, it was a necessary expenditure and a significant one for many farm operations. It's just one example of the kind of thought that went into the development of our Made in Manitoba Green Plan that deserves to be respected.
And I understand that the Keystone Agricultural Producers have been calling for action too at the show.
Yeah, what they have been collecting information from their membership and from farmers, basically saying, please come and show us your fuel bills and show us how much the carbon taxes actually cost you. And so they are releasing some of those preliminary numbers. And some of those numbers are basically that, you know, for a producer who is growing 500 acres of corn, that, you know, the carbon tax bill is over $1,700 to dry that crop. And some of the other numbers, you know, on average, $3.69 per acre going into a carbon tax, and that, you know, overall they're estimating that this has cost farmers $1.7 million for corn, for essentially corn alone. They don't even have an idea of what it would be for, you know, all the wheat and the canola and all this, the other crops that have required drying this fall.
And did I hear that the Federal Green Party has also weighed in and said that the farmers should catch a break on this?
Yeah, so Kate Story, who is the Green Party agriculture critic, but those in Manitoba will likely remember her better as the Manitoba Organic Alliance past president, she is basically calling for grain dryers to have an exemption on the carbon tax, much like CAP and the province currently is. And her argument is basically that a grain dryer is a piece of equipment similar to as a tractor or what have you, and should therefore similarly be exempt from the carbon tax. And when I spoke to her, she basically said that, you know, a carbon tax is meant to change behaviors, but that there isn't a whole lot of option in terms of using a grain dryer, and particularly in a year like this. And so therefore, having a carbon tax on grain dryers isn't really changing behavior. It's punitive. And it's also worth noting that her party is also asking the federal government to be looking at some longer term solutions as well. So, you know, looking at energy efficiency for grain dryers, looking at the development of some shorter season varieties that maybe don't need grain drying the same way, and that sort of thing.
Well, that's great. Thanks for filling us in on that, Alexis.
No problem, Gord. Always great to be here.
That was Manitoba Cooperator reporter Alexis Stockford filling us in on the Ag Days controversy over carbon tax and grain drying. A bit later, we'll be speaking to Craig Klemmer, Chief Agriculture Economist with Farm Credit Canada. You're listening to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media from on location at Manitoba Ag Days. I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. We're joined now by Spencer Myers, Glacier Farm Media's technology writer. Spencer, thanks for being here.
Hey, Gord. Thanks for having me.
So, you personally made a presentation about how farm machinery will evolve. Can you share the high points of that presentation with our listeners?
Sure. So, I was very fortunate to be asked to speak at this year's Ag Days, and they wanted me to speak about the evolution of machinery. So, rather than speaking about really hyper-analyzing certain pieces of machinery, we decided to look at overall trends, both in development and buying habits of the average farm. So in my presentation, I tried to show how different pieces of machinery have evolved, and then how the average Canadian farmer has sort of maybe either adapted or not adapted some of these innovations and new inventions.
So can you give us an example of one piece of farm equipment and how it's evolved?
So a really good example is the modern day tractor. I feel that since we started designing it essentially over 100 years ago, design hasn't really stopped. And while there was a race to come up with a very uniform design for a tractor, right now we're seeing companies and producers try to solve really hyper-specific problems. So a lot of that is coming from producer feedback. Farmers are very vocal about basically saying, we're spending a lot of money on this equipment and we want it to perform in a certain way. So manufacturers are listening, and I would say that the adaption of high horsepower tractors, but also making average things like GPS easier to install, making cabs bigger. I know that sounds silly, but that has been a big push over the last few years, and the main emphasis for that has been operator comfort.
And generally, technology and innovation has been a major theme of the show. That you're kind of our specialist in that area at Glacier Farm Media. What have you been seeing at the show that's been most interesting to you?
There's been a lot of discussion on data collection. I spoke a little bit about that in my presentation, but I think that's better left to experts like Christian Hebert or people who are very, very well-versed with that financial data and how to use it. A big question has been basically data collection. How do we work with these sets of data, and what do we do with it?
So what does that mean, managing that data better?
A lot of it comes down to learning how that information is meant to be used in decisions, and I know that that's also a vague answer, but a lot of it is learning about how to compare production data with your financial data. That was a big point that was stressed in Christian Hebert's presentation about how the financial data is really the bedrock of information that farmers can be looking at, because it's accurate, there's long-term data to look for, and it's also free was a big point of that he was stressing.
And now my sense generally is that in the farm community, there's this sort of sense we have the data, but now what? Can you talk a little bit about that?
And actually, now that you say that, that was one of the other presentations I sat in. It was a producer panel with a few different farmers, and their whole discussion was, we have the data, now what do we do with it? A lot of their examples came from using their production data to really, really nail down their fertilizer applications. And that comes down to variable rate application, using a little bit less chemical, hopefully. But that's where a lot of it was focused on in their panel. It was showing you how to take this data and actually make decisions with it. And a lot of that was directly, mostly revolving around input costs and seed costs.
I think that certainly the agriculture industry really understands and is very interested in bringing this technology to the farm for various reasons. What I'm a little more curious about, though, is how are farmers reacting to this this technology and this sort of word that there's going to be this new revolution on their farms? Are they interested in it? Is it something they're kind of dreading? Where are we on the adoption curve?
In terms of interest, I would have to say yes and no, just simply because there's so many different types of new technology and data being thrown at the farmer right now. I have spoken to a few farmers who have admitted that they do feel a little overwhelmed right now. There is a push for farmers to start collecting almost every piece of production data under the sun, but a lot of that costs money, a lot of it takes time, and I have spoken with farmers from older generations who seem simply not interested in some of the new technology and data collection software, while some of the younger farmers are a little quicker to maybe see a quicker benefit to that. It seems to be a little generational in terms of how quickly they maybe want to adapt some of this technology, but I would say the interest is there overall. And I think farmers are facing a looming question right now, and unfortunately I don't have the best answer, but farmers are feeling this. We have the data, now what? And I do feel like we're in a bit of a learning curve for the next few years figuring out that kind of that problem.
Well, thanks a lot, Spencer.
Thanks, Gord.
That was Glacier Farm Media technology reporter Spencer Myers telling us about the technology and innovation focus of this year's Manitoba Ag Days. You're listening to Between the Rows from On Location at Manitoba Ag Days in Brandon. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. Farm Credit Canada's chief agriculture economist, Craig Klemmer, gave his annual update again this year, and I was able to catch up with him afterwards for a quick chat. Craig, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
So as we move into 2020, what are the big trends that you're going to be watching this year, both yourself as an economist and Farm Credit as an organization?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things that you need to be keeping an eye on for 2020. Obviously, the big story out there is trade, and do we see some easing of trade relations and opportunities for exports for Canadian agriculture? The dollar, and do we see movements in the value of the Canadian dollar? And you know, we're expecting it to trend mostly sideways at 75 cents, but do we see it moving higher or lower? And then, you know, interest rate movements is going to be some of the big things that... do we see some downward pressure on interest rates in Canada, the United States?
You know, and as I was watching your presentation earlier, I was impressed that a lot of these kind of big, broad macro things that'll affect all of us who are operating in the economy, which of course means all of us, they seem to be a bit almost Goldilocks. You know, they're not too hot, they're not too cold, they're trading in a band, you know, and it's really, you know, the water seems kind of fine. You know, is that something we can kind of depend on or hope for to continue?
Well, yeah, I would say we hope that we continue. If we look at where we are right now with the dollar around that 75 cent, interest rates holding flat, you know, you get a good balance of a fairly strong consumer demanding the products that we're producing here in agriculture, as well as you're seeing a good balance of opportunities for exports and the competitiveness of the productions we're moving, while also, you know, some stability in input prices. And stability is something that our industry can work really well with. We have very strong managers, but it's when you have those wild fluctuations that can really be a challenge for a number of producers.
And speaking of wild fluctuations, one of the things that's been just all over the map lately is trade, and you alluded to that earlier. And I guess I'm wondering, in your presentation you talked about this a bit, maybe you can kind of fill us in a little bit here on the podcast. What are we looking at as we see the Canada-US-Mexico agreement really coming into force, the phase one of the China-US deal? How is this going to play out for Canadian farmers?
Yeah, so when it comes to Canadian farmers, there's some similarities in the products that we're producing here in Canada and the United States. And, you know, we know we produce some of the best products in the world. But when we look at these new trade agreements with China and the United States, and they've made some pretty lofty commitments in terms of the exports that they're committing to. And the reality is, or the question is that demand side there? And does this mean pushing out export opportunities from other countries because of this commitment to the U.S.? Or how is this all going to play out? So there's more questions than answers right now, but I think it's important that we monitor it and continue to see how it evolves. And you know, the product that we're producing here in Western Canada, a lot of it we need to find markets for it into the global market. So, you know, we've done fairly well in 2019, but there does look to be some other changing dynamics out there.
When you talk about that demand, and especially in the China-US deal, one of the things I wonder is, you're not really talking about that demand disappearing. It's simply being sort of shifted to another area. They may have an agreement, but that means other people are going to be wanting our products. Like, you know, the things sort of move as part of a complex. And I think, you know, is that sort of some comfort for the Canadian farmer?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's always that moving a product around, and that's why, you know, mentioned about the Canadian dollar is going to continue to make our exports competitive. We saw this with canola this year, where we've had some challenges getting canola into the Chinese market, but we've seen some increased exports into other parts of the world as well, and we'll continue to see those ebbs and flows and changes in trading dynamics, and overall Canadian agriculture has been extremely resilient and finding the markets, and as a result producer prices have been holding up okay, given all of the things that we're seeing out there.
You paint a relatively optimistic picture, and I think a lot of people will take some comfort from that. I think there's a tendency when you're talking about the economic situation to always look for the doom and gloom. However, are there dangers you're watching this year?
Oh, sure. I think we got to be realistic. You know, we've had some production challenges, and we continue, you know, there's inventories building up in Canada, and it's going to be important that we move those products. And as we have those large supplies, that's going to put some downward pressure on prices. There's continues to be some uncertainty about, where we're going to go into 2020. We're going to have a very busy spring here. We got a lot of fall work that didn't get completed, and it's going to mean some tight timelines for getting the new crop in the ground. We had some disruptions, and there's a lot of wonderabouts in terms of African swine fever, and you know, does that spread, and making sure that we can protect our hog industry in Canada and North America from the disease. So there's no shortage of headwinds out there and challenges for the industry that they're got to deal with. But I think overall we're sitting in a pretty good spot. We just got to take advantage of these opportunities to continue this momentum forward. We are seeing commodity prices coming down, and there has been some downward pressure on world prices, and that's something that the industry continues to have to digest.
So just one question in closing, and that is, economies and markets generally, they always boil down to sentiment in the end, and how are people feeling. With that in mind, how is 2020, in your view, going to feel to the Canadian farmer, and how can they manage around the reality of it, of working in that economy?
You know, I think overall people are cautious, and you know, I think there's a lot of worries and wonderabouts out there. Commodity prices, I mentioned, are coming down. Land prices are fairly high and continue to be increasing, and producers are being cautious about where they invest and what is the best investment for their operations. Do I need to buy a new grain dryer? Should I be buying new equipment or upgrading some of the equipment? And we're seeing those in some of the farm equipment numbers, where we're seeing some lower overall sales of new equipment in the demand. So, you know, people are being cautious, and people are trying to protect their financial position, and I think they're being very rational about it, given where we're seeing the markets and some of the trends that have been out there for us. So, we have a lot of good managers out there, and I think that the strength in management will continue to carry us through.
That's great. Thanks so much for joining us, Craig.
Thank you very much for your time.
That was Farm Credit Canada Chief Agricultural Economist Craig Klemmer giving his view of the economy and agriculture. That's been another edition of Between the Rows, on location this week at Ag Days in Brandon. That's been another edition of Between the Rows, on location this week at Manitoba Ag Days in Brandon. I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore, saying so long, and we hope you'll join us again next week.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.